one into the night, deep into right, way out of here.
Swung on,
did it,
crushed, and the Phillies are going to lead it.
Harper, the swing of his life.
The 0-2 pitch, swing and a miss, struck him out.
From WHYY, it is hitting season. Hey there, podcast pals. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on X and Blue Sky at John Stolness. Coming up, Phillies sweep the Marlins. They remain red hot and are a major league best 13-5 in the month of August. We'll tell you how they took care of the Marlins here this week at Citizens Bank Park. Lots of good pitching, and the offense continues to display a newfound patience that the entire city of Philadelphia is just falling in love with. Have they changed their stripes? Can we believe that this is the new and improved Phillies offense, or is it just a temporary delusion that we are all suffering from? We'll talk about it. We'll talk a little bit about Aaron Nola, great start from him on Wednesday. Some thoughts about Zach Wheeler and his struggles of late. The Phillies also sign a former pretty good Major League Baseball pitcher who could emerge with the team here later in the season. We'll talk about that. And then I want to get into some stuff around Major League Baseball. There is some weird stuff going on in the majors that we haven't talked a whole lot about on this podcast, but if you're a baseball fan and you're into weird things, you might want to stick around for the last segment, because we're going to talk about some of the weirder items that we've seen around baseball here over the last few weeks. All that coming up here on this edition of Hittin' Season. Please leave a 5-star rating and a review for the Hittin' Season podcast if you listen to us over at Apple Podcasts, and tell your friends and family members about the show. It does help the podcast grow, helps more people find us when they're doing searches if you do that. So Spotify, Overcast, everywhere you can get podcasts, that's where you can find Hittin' Season, the best Phillies podcast ever created. All right, Phillies sweep the Marlins, their second series sweep in a row. The Phillies finally get to 12 games over 500. The first time this year, they've reached 12 games over 500, and it has been a Sisyphean effort for them to do that. They had been 0-5 in previous attempts to go over 11 games over 500. They'd gotten to 11 games over 500 and then just seemed to hit that rock. It would fall back down the hill and they'd have to start pushing it back up again. The last time they had gotten to 11 games over 500 was back on July 20th. So this, their sixth opportunity to finally cross over Mount 11 games over 500 was back on July 20th, and on Wednesday night, the Phillies finally managed to do that with a 4-1 win over the Marlins, their sixth win in a row, sweeping Miami. And that Field of Dreams game against the Twins last week, boy, it really does feel like the season's going to pivot on the cornfields. It really does feel that way, and don't look now. We're going to do a little standings update here. All of a sudden, the Phillies, they're back in the picture in the National League East. A week ago, last Wednesday, the Phillies were 9.5 games back of the Atlanta Braves in the National League East. Do you want to know where they're going to wake up on Thursday morning? They're going to wake up just 4.5 games back of the Braves in the National League East after Atlanta was swept by the Minnesota Twins, the team the Phillies swept in the previous series. The Phillies have made up 5 games in the last week. So they are now 4.5 games back in the National League East. And do you remember just a few days ago, the Phillies had been knocked out of playoff positioning? They were a game out of the third wild card on the outside looking in after that series in St. Louis. Well, a 6-game winning streak and back-to-back series sweeps of the Twins and Marlins. And all of a sudden, the Phillies hold a 3-game lead over Arizona for the third wild card. And they currently hold the second wild card with a 1-game lead over the San Diego Padres for wild card 2. And because the Phillies actually have the season tiebreaker, having won the season series with the Padres, it's actually like a 1.5-game lead. The Padres will have to finish with a better record than the Phillies in order to finish ahead of them in the standings. So the Phillies making up a lot of ground in the last week, really kind of unusual here in mid-August to make up that kind of ground. Now, it's still very unlikely the Phillies are going to make up all the games they need to make up and catch the Braves in the National League East. Very unlikely. You're still looking at the wild card, and they are still 4 games behind the Cubs for the top wild card spot. It's really what you want to get. You either want to get that National League East or that top wild card spot. Because I really do, the Phillies are almost certainly going to be playing in the wild card round. They're almost certainly not going to catch the Brewers unless the Dodgers collapse, which we're going to talk about the Dodgers a little bit at the end of the show and what they've been going through here in the month of August. They're still probably not catching either of those teams to get the first round by winning the division and finishing with one of the two best records in the National League. And you know what? I think that's okay. The last 2 years, the Phillies had that bye past the wild card round, didn't do them any good in the divisional round. And the 2 years in which the Phillies had to play in the wild card round, they reached the World Series and they came within one game of getting back to the World Series the following year. So maybe continuing their push in the wild card, having to continue to scrap during the last month and a half of the season, makes them more prepared for October baseball. Right now, the Phillies are seemingly kind of looking locked into that wild card two or wild card three. But as we've seen here over the last week, one team gets hot, another team struggles. All of a sudden, a lot can change. And now here are the Phillies, just 4.5 games back of the Braves in the National League East and 4 back of the Cubs for that top wild card spot. Let's talk a little bit about this Marlins series. And Aaron Nola, the star of Wednesday's game, a 4-1 win for the Phils. And it was a throwback start for the former ace right-hander. He went 7 innings for the Phillies. It seems like it's been 5 years, and I know it hasn't been, but it feels like it's been 5 years since Aaron Nola went 7 innings in a game and gave up just 1 run. He'd only gone 7 innings in one other start this season. That was in Kansas City against the Royals, a game in which he gave up 3 runs. The team lost that game 5-2, but he had a good outing. That was like his best start of the season up until the game here on Wednesday. But the last time he'd gone 7 innings and gave up just 1 run was September 26th of last year against the Twins, his final start of last season, in which he went 8 innings and gave up just 1 run on 2 hits, struck out 9, and didn't walk anybody. That was how he finished the 2025 season. But it was only one of 2 starts all of last year in which he went at least 7 innings. He gave up just 1 run in 7 innings in a start in April of 2025 as well against the Chicago Cubs. So Aaron Nola used to do stuff like this quite a bit. It's been a minute since he's done 7 innings and just 1 run allowed, but it was a tremendous performance, a tremendous outing, gave up just 1 solo home run and really didn't experience a whole lot of danger in the start. It continues a run of solid pitching from Aaron Nola here of late. The 33-year-old has a 2.51 ERA in his last 5 starts. His knuckle curve is really dancing right now. In the Field of Dreams game that he pitched in, he struck out 8 Minnesota Twins on the knuckle curve. And on Wednesday night, he struck out 7 Marlins on that pitch. Obviously, hitters don't know what to do with it right now. And that's always been Nola's strikeout pitch. It's always been his put-away pitch. And right now, it is doing exactly that. It's, again, a little bit of throwback. A little bit of throwback Aaron Nola. And right now, during this hot stretch, 28 and two-thirds innings pitched, he has 34 strikeouts over that period. Only 5 national... This stat came from Codify on X, only 5 National League pitchers have 25 or more strikeouts in August. Christopher Sanchez, Jesus Luzardo, and Aaron Nola are among the 5, and they all have the best ERA in those 5 starts among all those pitchers with 25 strikeouts. Aaron Nola's ERA 2.74 in August here. Luzardo, by the way, 1.25, and Sanchez is 1.17. So, I mean, these 3 guys are really hot right now and really spinning it. But Aaron Nola as your number 4 starter, if he can give you anything close to this the rest of the way, makes this Phillies team very dangerous. The Phillies improved to just 19-37 on the season in games in which neither of their top 3 starters were on the hill. So in games started by either Aaron Nola as the number 4 starter or the number 5 starter, and they've had obviously a cavalcade of arms take the number 5 starter role this year. The Phillies had only won 19 games and lost 37. Last couple times out, that's starting to change now because Aaron Nola is pitching so much better. And I don't know if this is anything that we can believe in It's probably not. I wouldn't feel good telling you Aaron Nola is back or, you know, this is a major change, a major shift or anything like that. I'm not comfortable going there. But I will say this. It's really good, really helpful, really nice to see, really useful by Aaron Nola here. The Phillies needed somebody to step up like this and produce, and Aaron Nola is doing just that. So tremendous run by Aaron Nola here at a time when they really needed it most. More from the game here on Wednesday night. The offense continued to perform very well. Luis Arraez pounded a two-run home run, batting in the cleanup spot, doing what cleanup men do. Trey Turner hit an RBI double, and Garrett Stubbs had an RBI bases-loaded infield single off Sandy Alcantara to account for the four Phillies runs. Brandon Marsh had a heck of a game defensively out in left field. He went over the wall in foul territory along the third base line. It was actually over the left field line. It's where the fence kind of raised up a little bit, and he went into the crowd to pull in a foul ball. He credited one of the spectators, one of the fans in the stands, for kind of giving way a little bit and letting him catch the ball. But he also then ran in on a sinking line drive and made a sliding catch with catching the ball just inches off the ground in the game on Wednesday as well. So Brandon Marsh had a really good defensive game in left field. And by beating the Marlins three straight games, they've really put some distance between them and Miami. Miami came into the game, just into the series, just one game back of the Phils in the standings. They're now four games back. No, pardon me. So I stand corrected. They were three games behind the Phillies in the standings. They're now six games back of the Phillies, and the Marlins now four games back of the third wild card. Their wild card chances took a big hit here in Philadelphia during the course of this week. Now, as we look at the other games in the series, this Phillies offense continues to roll. Alec Bohm and Bryson Stott, along with Bryce Harper in a lot of different ways, carrying the Phillies right now. Since August 9th, Alec Bohm has gone, this is the last 10 days, not counting the game on Wednesday, 16 for 32. I mean, his overall All-Star game numbers, his numbers since the All-Star game are going to look really good, but he really hadn't been hitting all that well since the All-Star game. It is just over the last 10 days since August 9th that Alec Bohm has gotten ridiculously hot. Again, 16 for 32. Now, he went 0 for 4 in the game here on Wednesday, so we'll have to update that to 16 for 36, but still, that is an unbelievable heater for Alec Bohm. His OPS now on the season, it was up to 688 coming into the game on Wednesday. It fell to 682, but he hasn't been that high since late March. It has been a real struggle for Bohm this year, but this hot stretch, again, like Aaron Nola, I hope it lasts, because when Alec Bohm is producing and hitting like this, he's their best right-handed hitter. And that's not a sentence you really ever want to say, that Alec Bohm is your best right-handed hitter, because generally speaking, he's not that good. Again, the OPS is only 688 even after this wildly hot streak. But he has been ridiculously hot. He has been scorching hot. And you just love to see Bohm settle in, right? He's been good with runners in scoring position all year. 339 batting average with runners in scoring position all year. That's been his one saving grace, is that he's actually gotten hits with runners in scoring position. The problem with the Phillies is, have been all season up until this last month, that they haven't had many guys on base. Of course, as I'm going to talk about in just a second, that is all changing. But Alec Bohm continues to be red hot, and he had a great series here on Monday and Tuesday against the Marlins, continuing to produce in the middle of the lineup. In the game on Tuesday, Bohm went 2 for 4 with two RBIs and a run. And in the game on Monday, he again was asserting himself. He also had a nice play at first base, catching a line drive and doubling a runner off of first base in the game on Tuesday. And in the game on Monday, went 1 for 4 with an RBI and a run scored. So Alec Bohm continuing to play good baseball here over the last 10 days or so. Bryson Stott, his hot streak goes back even further. Going back to June 3rd, he has simply been one of the best players in baseball. He has hit .307 with a .401 on base percentage and a .455 slugging percentage during the course of these last couple of months, going back to June 3rd. He is the second most valuable position player in baseball since the All-Star game. Only Pete Crow Armstrong has been worth more wins above replacement than Bryson Stott here in the unofficial second half of the season. And he's doing all this having moved from second base to third base and playing gold glove caliber defense at third base. Now, Stott also went 0-for-4 in the game here on Wednesday night, hitting .264 on the season with a .755 OPS. But we are watching Stott. I don't know. I'm going to ask the question. Are we watching him turn into a star player? Be a little bit of a late bloomer situation. But I got to say, you know, his play at third base, all of a sudden now, you're going into this offseason with a little bit more flexibility in terms of what you want to add to the roster. Because I think it's clear Alec Boehm will not be here next year. The fact that Stott can play third base this way means that you don't necessarily need to go out this offseason looking for a third baseman specifically. You're going to move Trey Turner to the outfield this offseason. So you could be looking at shortstop. So you could have Stott play shortstop and look for a third baseman, or you could have Stott play third base and go looking for a shortstop. Again, if an outfielder comes available, you could keep Turner at shortstop and just look for an outfielder, but I don't know that there's going to be a solution there either. But Bryson Stott being able to play great defense at third base, great defense at second base, and pretty good defense at shortstop gives you a lot of flexibility. And there's a lot of talk now about signing him to a contract extension. I think if that happens, that would come this offseason. I want to see this season play out because we've seen Stott kind of go hot and cold, a little bit up and down. He had a great 2023 season. We all thought the breakout was coming, and then he became a very mediocre to below average player in 2024 and 2025. And now here in 2026, it looks like he's going to put together numbers similar to what we saw in 2023. Jason Stark had a crazy statistic about how great Bryson Stott has been, especially of late. He mentioned this number on 97.5 The Fanatic on Wednesday. Coming into the game on Wednesday, in his last 19 games, Bryson Stott had 19 walks in 19 games and only 4 strikeouts. In the last 20 years, only 2 other players had a span of 19 games with that many walks and that few strikeouts. Those 2 players, Barry Bonds and Albert Pujols, perhaps the 2 greatest hitters this generation has seen. Maybe the 2 best hitters since Ted Williams, right? I mean, going back 50 years, 60 years, 70 years. That's the kind of heater that Bryson Stott has been on. So you've got the daycare guys. These 2 guys who I will admit, I didn't think much of. And I'm still not sure about. But they are playing in a way that I didn't think they were going to get back to. I truly didn't think they were going to get back there. So this is one of those things. I'm thrilled to be wrong. I do not care about being wrong. If Bryson Stott turns into a star, I'll be happy. You could cold takes me till the cows come home on social media, folks. I do not care. You could take every word I've ever said and use it against me. Absolutely 100%. So Bryson Stott is absolutely playing some tremendous baseball right now. He's got a .340 batting average with runners in scoring position. But we have to talk about this offense as a whole here. And the turnaround we've seen from them, we talked a little bit about this on the previous podcast. The Phillies offense, since August began, has been nothing short of unbelievable in how they have completely reconfigured themselves. They went from the worst team in baseball at getting on base to the best team in baseball at getting on base. I'm going to read you some numbers here that are absolutely crazy, but on Wednesday night, in their 4-1 win, the Phillies pounded out 10 hits again. 10 hits by the Phillies in this game. They only walked once in the game. But they only struck out once as well. And it was the first time the Phillies lineup had just 1 strikeout in a game since June 3rd, 2024. And it's only the 5th time a Phillies lineup had just 1 strikeout in a game since 2012. That's crazy. This team has suddenly become a whole lineup full of Luis Arraez's. They don't walk, but they don't strike out either. But they have been walking. They have been walking a lot. It didn't happen on Wednesday night. And Sandy Alcantara is a good pitcher. He was not giving away a whole lot of free passes. But it was a game in which neither pitcher was giving out free passes. Aaron Nola didn't give out any walks in his 7 innings of work. But you had the Phillies bang out 10 hits and 4 more runs. Coming into August, through July, the Phillies had an on-base percentage of 303. It was dead last in baseball. Dead last. It is hard to be a functional offense when you have the worst on-base percentage in baseball. Coming into Tuesday's game, I don't have the updated numbers because I wrote an article for The Good Fight about this. It came out on Tuesday. So going into Tuesday's game, the Phillies on base percentage of 369 was an improvement of 63 points. And they moved from 30th to 1st in on base percentage. That's crazy. They did it while improving their slugging percentage. They went from 399 slugging, which was 18th in Major League Baseball, to a 414 slugging percentage, which is 14th in baseball. Now, it's not top 10, but they were able to improve their on-base percentage and improve their slugging percentage. It's interesting how those two things correlate. Here's something else interesting. In terms of runs, they ranked 18th in Major League Baseball in runs scored through July. In August, they've scored the third most runs. Again, coming into Tuesday. And the games on Tuesday and Wednesday will only help those numbers. The Phillies on Tuesday scored 6 runs. They scored another 4 runs on Wednesday. So pretty good stuff there. Their weighted runs created, they went from 28th to 5th. 5th highest weighted runs created here in the month of August. Their walk rate, they went from a 7.8% walk rate, which was 28th in baseball through July. In August, they've improved, this is incredible, they've improved their walk rate 5.5% in the month of August. They went from 28th in baseball, okay, third worst walk rate, to 1st in the month of August. And their strikeout rate was 23.7% through July. 25th in baseball, 5th worst in baseball. Again, a remarkable turnaround. They've reduced their strikeout rate by about 8.5%. They have the lowest strikeout rate in Major League Baseball in the month of August. Number one in on-base percentage, number one in walk rate, number one in strikeout rate, third in runs. Think all of those things aren't correlated? Of course they are. Of course they're correlated. And some of the individual numbers by these players, they're just eye-popping. Harper's on-base percentage was 356 through July. Bryce Harper now is top 10 in Major League Baseball in on-base percentage at 381 overall. A 381 on-base percentage for Bryce Harper. He went 1-for-3 with a walk in the game here on Wednesday, so he was on base 2 more times in 4 plate appearances. Just incredible. In August, his on-base percentage coming into Tuesday was 520. And as I just told you, he was on base twice in 4 plate appearances in the game on Wednesday. And in the game on Tuesday, Harper went 0-for-2, but with 2 more walks. So 2 times on base in 4 plate appearances on Tuesday, 2 times on base in 4 plate appearances on Wednesday. That number's not going down, folks. He's walked in a staggering 29.3% of his plate appearances in the month of August. He's talked about the comfort level he has with Luis Arraez hitting behind him. His approach at the plate since Arraez arrived in Philadelphia has been a 180. And could it really just be that Luis Arraez is the comfort blanket, the security blanket that Bryce Harper had been asking for all of these years? Luis Arraez, really? It's fascinating. But he's not alone. Bryson Stott's on-base percentage jumped from 313 through July to 514 in August coming into Tuesday. Alec Boehm's was 283. It's 422 in the month of August. Trey Turner's improved from 296 to 323. Kyle Schwarber, about the same. 365 on-base percentage in August. It was 367 coming into the month. So it's been about the same. But Justin Crawford has had a 378 on-base percentage here in the month of August coming into Tuesday. This is all obviously very welcome news for a fan base that has watched this team in October flail, chase, strikeout, whiff, too many 1-2-3 innings, too many rallies that die. I don't know if this is all the work of Luis Arraez. I don't know exactly what kind of influence he's having. I really don't. I really don't know exactly what impact he's having on the individual players. I'm sure he is imparting wisdom. I'm sure they're watching his plate appearances. They're watching his approach. Is that the reason for this turnaround? Could it be the team meeting that they had at the end of July where they were told to address their plate discipline, to stop giving away plate appearances? I mean, they've heard that before. It couldn't have been the first time someone's talked to them about that. I don't know what the reason is, gang. All I know is we want this. This is something we want. Now, let me also say this. Baseball is a game of adjustments. And the word got out on this Phillies lineup. You don't have to throw them strikes. They're not going to take their walks. You can live out of the strike zone against the Phillies offense. They will oblige you. They're not doing that right now. So at a certain point, pitchers are going to adjust back, and they're going to start to throw more first and second pitch fastballs or pitches over the plate. And there will come a time when some of the hitters will have to start swinging early in the count again. I'm not looking forward to that because I love watching these Phillies hitters work pitchers. I love 7, 8, 9 pitch plate appearances by these guys. It just tells you that they're dialed in. They're making pitchers work, and that's when pitchers make mistakes. If you're on pitch 9 or pitch 10 of a sequence, the odds are far higher that a pitcher is going to make a mistake and leave one out over the middle of the plate to get hit somewhere hard. And a lot of the Phillies right now, a lot of their hits are singles. You get a lot of singles. They're stringing together hits, which is great. You want to see it. A lot of contact against better pitching in the postseason. It's harder to do that. The Brewers ran into that problem against the Dodgers last year. Now, that might have just been the Dodgers pitching staff was on some other level, because you had a team like the Phillies that really relied on the long ball that couldn't get it done. And then you had a team like the Brewers who specialized in doing what the Phillies have been doing in August, but they had done it all season long and they're doing it again this year. Great plate discipline, really frustrating to pitch to. They work counts. They hit a lot of singles and doubles, and they were not able to do that against the Dodgers in the postseason last year. The home run still wins you more playoff games, but I think this team, this Phillies team, needed a change in approach. They couldn't keep doing what they were doing, and for this Phillies team, I think this is all working out just so really well. And we saw that in this series against the Marlins. I want to talk a little bit about Zach Wheeler. His game on Tuesday night, the Phillies won, but it was not the Zach Wheeler we have come to feel good about. And this continues a run of starts from him where he admits he's not feeling it. He's not great. There's something going on with him. Now, thankfully, it does not feel, and this is always my worry with Zach Wheeler, it's health. When you're a 36-year-old pitcher, I'm concerned that the arm is going. The velocity was really good on Tuesday night. Zach Wheeler's fastball topped out at 97 miles an hour. He said he made a mechanical tweak to get into his legs more, to use his legs more from the mound, and that it helped his fastball. And it did. It was up. It topped out at 97. It averaged 95.5. That's more than his season average of 95.1. And he was throwing first pitch strikes. 15 of 21 hitters got a first pitch strike, but he's continued to get burned by 2-out runs. He allowed 5 2-out runs in the 5th inning in his last 2 starts. And he's also uncharacteristically had no command, especially of his breaking pitches. He's walked 10 guys in his last 3 starts. That's 4 more than he had in 6 starts in May. In 6 starts in May, he only had 6 walks in those 6 starts. But now 10 walks in his last 3 outings. He's only gotten into the 6th inning once in his last 5 starts. And in his last 5 starts, his ERA is 6.64. Now, he entered Tuesday in the top 25 in fewest walks per nine innings, but he walked four Marlins in the game on Tuesday. The last two times he's walked four or more batters before this stretch was May 29th, 2025, and April 25th, 2024. Two starts in less than 2 weeks in which he walked at least four players. First time he'd done that since May of 25 and April of 24. So I don't really know what's going on with Zach Wheeler. That he says the secondary stuff is it's just not happening for him right now. But he does not have a tired arm. The velocity was there with his fastball, which means I feel like this is something he can and will work through. I'm not overly worried about Zach Wheeler. I think at some point it's going to click in, it's going to lock in. It sounds like it's a mechanical thing that they're trying to figure out. As long as the fastball velocity is there, I think he will rediscover command. I'm not concerned. I know there's a lot of, if this continues, yes, I'm concerned. But I don't anticipate this being something that we're going to see into September. I'd be very, very surprised if this is something we see into September. And at the moment, Aaron Nola is picking up a little bit of the Zach Wheeler slack. That's what teammates do. That's what good teammates do. And Zach and Aaron go way back, you know. They've been around each other for quite a little while, so it's a nice thing to see. I mentioned in the intro that the Phillies signed a major league pitcher, kind of similar to the way they signed Walker Buehler last year. The Phillies went out and they signed left-handed junk baller Nestor Cortes. You may remember him from the New York Yankees. He always has kind of a funky delivery. Sometimes will do an extended leg kick, hold his leg up in the air for a few seconds to mess with a hitter's timing. I kind of like Nestor Cortes. They signed him to a major league deal, which means they intend to use him on the big league staff, maybe even as soon as this year. Now, he's been injured this season. Hasn't gotten in a game yet this year. If he comes to the Phillies, it would likely be out of the bullpen, but it could be a sneaky addition to a postseason roster as a left-hander out of the pen. This is what the Dodgers do every year. They have somebody, they don't pitch him all year, and then they get him on the big league roster 2 weeks before the end of the season, and he becomes an effective weapon out of the bullpen. Cortes is not going to throw hard. He's not going to throw the ball by anybody. He relies on deception and a ton of breaking stuff. He's 31 years old, but he did spend a number of years in the Yankees rotation as a really good starting pitcher. In 2024, he pitched 174 innings and had a 3.77 ERA. Now, we don't know yet if it's a multi-year deal for Nestor Cortes in Philadelphia. That would put him in place for next season if it is, which could make a little bit of sense because the Phillies can certainly use some depth, both in 2026 and I'm sure next year as well. They also means they don't have to rush him to action after the offseason surgery that he had this year. Last October, he underwent surgery to repair a torn biceps tendon in his throwing arm. He had a really rough year in Milwaukee and San Diego, made just 8 starts a year ago before he got hurt. And really the injuries, I think, factored into his 6.29 ERA. Gave up 13 home runs in 34 innings. That's just absolutely crazy. If he does hit the big leagues and if he does make a few starts for the Phillies, it gives them a left-hander with a little bit of a different profile. Sanchez and Luzardo obviously are hard throwers, and Cortes would be kind of in the mold of like a Ranger Suarez, although not nearly the pitcher that Ranger Suarez is right now, although Ranger Suarez has dealt with his own issues this season, but Ranger Suarez was also an all-star this year. And Cortes does have postseason experience, and that is something I think the Phillies are looking for in a guy like this. It's one of the reasons they went after Walker Buehler last year. Buehler pitched really well for the Dodgers in the playoffs last year. Cortes fits that bill. He's made 5 playoff appearances in his career, including 3 postseason starts. So the Phillies get Nestor Cortes. They did designate Brian Keller for assignment. My guess is he'll clear waivers and be welcomed back to Lehigh Valley. The Phillies are going to start with Nestor Cortes in Clearwater and get him time down there before they consider and they see what things look like before they bring him up to the majors. I did want to run a couple of things around the majors by you. Because this is a Phillies podcast, but I still think it's fun to keep an eye on what's going on around the major leagues. And if you're not paying attention to what's happening around the majors, there's some very interesting, very weird stuff. For anybody that watched the playoffs last year and was into baseball at all last year, the name Cal Raleigh I'm sure, is one that you remember. He became a superstar last year when he hit 60 home runs for the Seattle Mariners as a catcher, an unheard of number for a catcher, set the all-time record for most home runs by a catcher, 125 RBIs, a 948 OPS, and a dream season for Cal Raleigh. What we have seen from him this year is the most catastrophic fall I have ever seen year to year from one player, from one year to the next. Cal Raleigh is hitting 156 this season. He has a 567 OPS. That's unbelievable. He has been a negative replacement player this year. He was worth 7.2 wins above replacement last year. This year, negative 0.5. And here is the most staggering statistic about Cal Raleigh. He is the only batter in Major League Baseball history to have a lower batting average in a season. Let me rephrase this. There is only one batter in Major League history to have a lower batting average in a season with more plate appearances, and that is Joe Gerhardt for the 1885 New York Giants. No player in the modern era has had a lower batting average with this many plate appearances than Cal Raleigh. In other words, when a player is playing as badly as Cal Raleigh, typically they don't stay on a major league roster. They don't continue to get plate appearances. They don't continue to get at-bats because they're so bad. But because Cal Raleigh hit 60 home runs a year ago and had a 948 OPS. And by the way, Cal Raleigh had been a consistent 30 home run hitter before that, in the three or four seasons before he hit 60. He'd always been a good power hitter. He's never had a season like this. It's just mind-blowing how terribly. We remember Cal Raleigh, with the argument last year was, who's the American League MVP, Aaron Judge or Cal Raleigh? Cal Raleigh almost won the American League MVP last year. 156 batting average. Only one batter in history to have a lower batting average with more plate appearances. Going back to 1885, that's just absolutely crazy. Here's something else that's nuts. Vladimir Guerrero Jr., generally considered one of the best young hitters in the game, one of the best young power hitters in the game. We got to look at him when he came through Citizens Bank Park a few weeks ago, and he had a really good series against the Phillies. Did you know that this huge player, big power hitter, hits a ton of home runs? He has gone a full calendar year since his last home run in his home ballpark. That would be like Bryce Harper going a calendar year without hitting a home run at Citizens Bank Park. Can you imagine that? A full calendar year between home runs in his home ballpark for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. This is one of the best young players in baseball. It's just a weird oddity. I mean, there's a curse or there's something happening there that's just totally unexplainable. Here's something else. Here's another fun fact. On Tuesday, the Milwaukee Brewers beat the Seattle Mariners 22-0. They went for two early in the game on the first touchdown. That's why you got the weird 22-0 score. Scoregami! I don't know if that's true or not. That 22-0 final score matched the largest shutout win since the start of the 1888 season. That's according to MLB.com's Sarah Langs. Your Philadelphia Quakers won 24-0 on June 28, 1887. A 22-0 win has been recorded only twice since then by the 1975 Pirates and the 2004 Cleveland then Indians. Now we call them the Guardians. But anytime you can get a Philadelphia Quakers mention in, you got to do it on a Philadelphia podcast. You got to do it. Last thing I want to talk about. Are the Dodgers leaking oil? I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast that I didn't think the Phillies had a chance of catching the Dodgers for the second best record in the National League. But they are 6-10 in August, guys. In their last 16 games, they're 5-11. They were swept by the Boston Red Sox and the Chicago Cubs and lost a series to the Arizona Diamondbacks and Brewers during that span. Since July 1st, the Dodgers are 18-21. And here you have a guy they just got all kinds of problems right now. Kyle Tucker, the big free agent that they signed, and everybody, you know, they signed Kyle Tucker, and this got everybody all up in arms about the big spending Dodgers and the advantages that they have and all that stuff. They signed him to a four-year, $240 million contract. He's hitting 189 with a 558 OPS at Dodger Stadium this year. 234 plate appearances at Dodger Stadium. And he dropped in the series finale where the Dodgers lost 3 of 4 at home to Milwaukee. He dropped an easy fly ball for a two-run, for an error. And then he dropped an easy fly ball for a two-run error in Colorado on Monday. So Sunday, he drops an easy fly ball. On Monday, he drops an easy fly ball. It has been a nightmare of a season for one of the best players in baseball, Kyle Tucker, in Los Angeles. And now you've got Edwin Diaz. Their closer was placed on the injured list on Tuesday. They have been having defensive troubles all over the place. Tommy Edman had two errors in a game recently. Mookie Betts has had some issues defensively. They've had some lapses running the bases. And the offense just is not hitting for Los Angeles right now. So this, it seems like, there's a reason teams don't win three straight World Series. Right? They've played a lot of games these last few years. It's possible, and I think probable, that this is not going to be a year the Dodgers win it all again. They've got issues. As big as their payroll is, the Dodgers are not a perfect team. They've got a lot of injuries. They've got a lot of guys who are underperforming. They may ramp it back up again in October. And they had some issues last year down the stretch, specifically with the bullpen, and they just used all of their starters to paper that up. But they've got other issues going on right now. There is an opportunity here in the National League for one of these teams, whether it's the Brewers, the Braves, the Cubs, the Phillies, or whoever else comes out of the National League in the wild card. These Dodgers are vulnerable. I'm telling you right now here on August 20th, these Los Angeles Dodgers are vulnerable. This is not a rock star team right now. And we'll see how things play out here over the last month and a half of the season. But I think the Dodgers are going to get tripped up in the playoffs. I truly do. I think they're going to get tripped up in the National League playoffs. I'm not sure who's going to do it, but I think it's absolutely going to happen. All right, let's finish up the podcast by looking ahead. The Phillies have an off day on Thursday, and then they welcome the Cardinals to Philadelphia for a really big series, another series with wild card implications. The Cardinals come to Philadelphia. They did a number on the Phillies in St. Louis. Now, it was hot and steamy and yucky and awful, and the Phillies just looked like they were exhausted. I think it was they had played like their 12th game in 12 days. The Field of Dreams game made it like 13 in 13 days. But they were on running on fumes there in St. Louis. I think they'll have more spring in their step after an off day on Thursday and welcoming in the Cardinals. The Cardinals do not have the off day on Thursday. They're finishing up a four-game series against the Reds on Thursday and will roll into Philadelphia without the benefit of an off day. So that should give the Phillies an advantage in terms of rest. St. Louis will come into Thursday 65-63, they're three games out of the third wild card, six games behind the Phillies in the standings. But again, the Cardinals did just take 2 of 3 from them in St. Louis. We don't know who's going to be starting for the Cardinals in this series, but Jesus Luzardo will get the ball on Friday for the Phillies, Andrew Painter on Saturday, and Christopher Sanchez will be going for win number 17 on Sunday for the Phils. Looking to have a 20-game winner. It's been a while for that to happen. All right, everybody, that's going to do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. I want to just, again, encourage everybody to please leave a 5-star rating and leave a review. Let me know what you think of the podcast. I love getting your feedback. So please do that on Apple Podcasts, leave a 5-star rating. When you do that, it does help make the show more discoverable for people when they do a search on the platform. I don't know why. I don't get the metrics. I don't understand how it works. I do understand how it works, but it would take too long to explain. But if you do that, if you interact with the show on Apple Podcasts, it will help other people find it and will help our numbers a little bit. So I'm always appreciative every time you guys do that. Thank you so much. And the really good ones, the really nice ones, I'll read on the air. The really nasty ones, I won't read on the air very much, I promise you. And please tell your friends and family members about us on Spotify, wherever it is you get your podcasts, if you're an audio podcast listener. You can always catch the roundtable editions of the podcast over on the WHYY YouTube channel as well. And if you have anything you'd like to tell us, you can always email the show, hittenseason@billypenn.com. Again, hittenseason@billypenn.com. You can record a voice memo on your Apple phone, on your iPhone, and email it to us. And if it's something that we can use on the show, we'll play it up. We'll play it back for you. So it's a way to interact with the Hidden Season podcast as well. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time right here on Hidden Season.